From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Washington Watch with Tony Perkins starts now.
Based on the way the negotiation was going, I think they were going to attack first. And I didn't want that to happen. So if anything, I might have forced Israel's hand. But Israel was ready and we were ready. And we've had a very, very powerful impact because virtually everything they have has been knocked out now.
That was President Donald Trump earlier today defending the strikes against Iran, now in their fourth day. Welcome to this March 3rd edition of Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Thanks so much for joining us. Well, coming up, the State Department is warning U.S. citizens in over a dozen Middle Eastern countries to leave immediately as Iran targets American embassies. Montana Senator Steve Daines, briefed by Pentagon officials on Operation Epic Fury just moments ago, joins us with the latest on Iran and the Middle East. Plus, Chris Mitchell, Middle East Bureau Chief for CBN News, joins us from Jerusalem with the latest on the impact of Iran's attacks on Israel. Well, as I mentioned, the State Department is urging Americans in the Middle East to evacuate. Now, this comes after President Trump said the war in Iran could continue for weeks. Joining me now is Washington Stand reporter Casey Harper. So, Casey, was this call to evacuate previously planned, or is this in response to Iran's attacks on surrounding Arab countries?
Yeah, thanks, Tony. This was not planned. This is something that is more expansive and more rapid than was expected. Even the president expressed surprise that Iran has been firing on U.S. presidents in many of these Gulf Arab states that might have actually stayed out of this war if Iran wasn't recklessly just firing on everyone within shooting distance, really. So now we have the State Department urging Americans in 14 countries to leave the region immediately, use whatever commercial transportation they can to get out of the way. Here is Secretary of State Marco Rubio yesterday on the current dangers in that region.
You see the attacks they're conducting right now? They're attacking airports, they're attacking hotels, they're hitting not just military bases, they're attacking our embassies directly, they're attacking facilities that have nothing to do with war or with military.
Now, Secretary Rubio urged Americans in the Middle East to register with the Smart Traveler Enrollment Program, which gives them up-to-the-date safety information, which it sounds like they're going to need. Rubio said earlier today that about 9,000 Americans have already evacuated the Middle East since the beginning of the war, as Washington is stepping up their efforts to help American citizens get out of the region.
All right, Casey, obviously we'll continue to watch that. By the way, let me thank the hundreds of you who yesterday text the word Iran to 67742 and joined the prayer initiative and took the pledge. And I want to encourage you, if you haven't done that, text Iran, I-R-A-N, to 67742, and we'll give you those prayer points to be praying. All right, Casey, in other news here at home, the House Oversight Committee has released video from the depositions of former President Bill Clinton and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. What are we learning from those?
Yeah, there's some very interesting footage coming out of Congress right now. So the House Oversight Committee released hours of footage showing that the Clintons being deposed about their ties to disgraced financier and sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Now, in each of their depositions, the Clintons both said they had no idea what Epstein was up to. And at one point during the former president, Bill Clinton's hearing, he did say that they had a right to ask these questions. Here's a clip of an exchange on whether Clinton ever visited Epstein's home.
Mr. President, did you visit Jeffrey Epstein's house while you were president?
I do not remember doing that. I do not believe I did.
How do you explain this discrepancy?
Objection calls for him to speculate.
Okay. I can't speculate. But all I can tell you is I don't remember being there.
Now, Clinton went on to say he never had any sexual contact with anyone introduced by Epstein or Ghislaine Maxwell, Epstein's associate. So more data coming out here, Tony, but it's kind of sad that we even have to talk about this kind of thing.
But I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon.
No.
Another topic, Casey, the U.S. Supreme Court has blocked a restriction in California that was preventing school officials from informing parents if their children were transitioning or pretending to be another gender. What can you tell us about this?
This is a big ruling from the Supreme Court on this case out of California. So the majority of the justices voted yesterday to stop this California law that really muzzled teachers and prevented them from telling parents, hey, your child is trying to transition their gender using different pronouns, that kind of thing. And it came after a legal appeal. Now, the court decided parents have the right to not be shut out of participating in decisions regarding children's, their child's mental health. The ruling was in favor of the parents, and it found, importantly, that they had both a religious right to be involved in their kid, but also a parental right, which seemed to be separate and was an important notice here, Tony. So a good win for parents. Kind of amazing the court had to weigh in on something like this, but parents should be glad with the ruling.
Yes, I would say, Casey, that we are glad that they, using our pronouns, that they made this decision. All right. Thanks so much for joining us and bringing us up to date. All right. Just moments ago, top Trump officials, administration officials, briefed members of the Senate on the U.S. military operations in Iran. Joining us now to share what he can from that briefing is Senator Steve Daines of Montana. He serves on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, among other committees. Senator Daines, welcome back to Washington Watch. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Tony.
All right. What can you share with us from the briefing that you received from the Pentagon?
Well, Tony, I'm very proud of the team that's leading this effort in Iran under the direction of President Trump. We had, of course, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, Secretary of War Pete Hegseth. We had the head of the CIA, John Ratcliffe, as well as head of Joint Chiefs of Staff, Raising Cane, as President Trump says. It was a great briefing. I think we can be encouraged as the progress made. We're just nearly 100 hours into this conflict, and we're making good, steady progress. I think it's also helped to remember, Tony, is when you look back at what's been going on for 47 years in Iran, there have just been two Ayatollahs. There was one there, the first one after the revolution when the Shah was removed. He was there for 10 years. The Ayatollah Khamenei that they took out, the Israelis took out, just in the first strike of this campaign, was there for 37 years. That's the 47-year arc. So this is just absolutely a tremendous blow to the regime in Iran. But importantly, as our forces are methodically and in a very disciplined way working with the Israelis and now other Arab countries who are asking for strike packages, given that the Iranians now have attacked virtually all of their Arab neighbors, they're going through taking out more and more of the launchers. This is important because, as we say, it's better to knock out the archer than try to knock out the arrows that once they come flying in the air with the intercepts. The intercepts are doing an amazing job. We're seeing that both in Israel and around our Arab countries that the Iranians have been targeting. But I think the name of the game here now is to continue to increase the tempo, which we're going to do. You're going to see even more strikes, more aggressive, quicker tempo, as we're working to literally obliterate the launchers to ensure the Iranians do not have the capabilities to have a nuclear program, either in the short term or the long term.
Speaking of that nuclear program, Senator Daines, was there a red line? Was there a tipping point in which the administration said, we've got to go?
Yeah, well, I think you have to step back and realize the Iranians were moving as fast as they could to continue to reconstitute their nuclear program through other means. And, of course, you could do that through acquiring technology from adversaries in the region. But what was important is that the Iranians were going to building more of their ballistic missiles. As we already have seen, these ballistic missiles are incredibly dangerous, and they have about 3,000 of them. They were on their way to build a significantly higher amount of these ballistic missiles. At some point, they would be able to overwhelm even our best air defenses. And so it was important that the strike was initiated before Iran got to a critical mass, where at that point, you can't touch them without having severe retribution and harm to not only the allies there in the Middle East, but with reach all the way to the United States. And so the president, in my opinion, Trump, made exactly the right call. You've had leaders over the years who have really worked in appeasement strategy with Iranians. I mean, think of the failed policies of Barack Obama, shipping pallet loads of cash, trying to negotiate with these terrorists on the JCPOA, that nuclear deal. Nonsense. President Trump made the right decision. He's destroying their military capabilities. The Navy is gone. Their air defenses will soon be gone. And we're going to have free reign in the air over Iran with the Israelis, as well as other Arab partners that now want to join the fight. Perhaps other European partners want to join the fight and completely destroy the military capabilities there in Iran, so they'll never, ever have a chance to reconstitute and build out a nuclear program. And of course, it'll be up to the Iranian people at some point that will want regime change. I think every one of us wants to see regime change. It will be up to the Iranian people to do so. But by taking out the Ayatollah and now many of the successors, well, their military leaders and their scientists, they're in a position where the Iranian people could rise up and put a new government in place.
Senator Daines, you mentioned the appeasement that we've seen in previous administrations. I would argue you almost go back to World War II, since we've had a victory mentality of actually winning a conflict. We've always kind of since Korean War, it's been more of a containment approach and never finishing the job. This appears like the president is very clear that this job is going to be finished.
Well, Tony, you're a veteran. You've served. We thank you for that service. My father's 86. He was a Marine also. My dad listened to the Marine hymn when he goes to bed at night. So I got raised the right way, Tony. But I'll tell you, think about a successful military endeavor has, number one, clear objectives, which this administration has. Number two, the use of overwhelming force, which is very important. You don't go into a conflict with half-hearted. It's immoral to put our troops in harm's way unless you are putting everything into that conflict. It's exactly what President Trump has done, amazing force posture right now surrounding Iran. And number three is the element of surprise, and that's exactly what happened. That was a brilliant strike when the Iranians were taken out during the day. The Iranian doctrine, in terms of their defenses, assumed the Israeli. They surprised him with it. Ayatollah had assembled many of his colleagues and his subordinates together in one place. That was a fatal mistake the Israelis struck when the Iranians were not expecting it.
Senator, this is clearly different from what we've seen with Afghanistan and other places. This is not a nation-building exercise. This is, as you said, it's going to be turned over to the people. But you're a member of the Foreign Affairs Committee. We just got about a minute and a half left, but I want to ask you this question. Are you concerned about what other actors in that region might fill the void that was that will be created by the absence of Iran in that regime?
You're always concerned about that. Tony, I just did a swing through Africa here 2 weeks ago into Cote d'Ivoire, to Nigeria, into DRC and Rwanda. You're seeing the sub-Saharan region of the world reconstituting of the terror force, the Boko Haram, Al-Qaeda, and ISIS. In fact, ISIS operational headquarters now are in sub-Saharan Africa. And that's, of course, you get your maps out, that's not very far from exactly what we're talking about here from Iran. So you're always going to be concerned about the wrong leaders being put in place to succeed the demise of the Ayatollah. But that's why I think there's going to be a lot of work done. The Israelis, I think, are looking at that very, very carefully. That's not going to be our decision, but we want to make sure that we have taken out the force posture of the Iranians so they cannot use force against the people. Remember, the people are pro-Western. Many of them are pro-American. It's the Ayatollah and this horrible, evil regime that is the problem. And we want to pray and hope for the right kind of change in power. And I'm confident we'll do a lot better than we've had. Hopefully, it'll be the right long-term stability, which we once had, you know, decades ago. Think about Iran being friendly to the United States, a friend to Israel, a sign of the Abraham Accords someday. That right. will be a game changer for our children and grandchildren.
Absolutely. Senator Steve Daines, always great to see you, my friend. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Tony.
And as the senator said, we need to pray. So I encourage you, take the prayer pledge, text Iran to 67742. All right, we're back after this. When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people
to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth
the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature
and of nature's God entitle them.
A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes
which impel them to the separation.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
That they're endowed by their Creator
with certain unalienable rights.
That among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men,
deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed.
Happy 250th.
Happy 250th.
Happy 250th.
Happy 250th birthday, America.
May God bless America.
You see, America has freedom for a purpose. The question is, are we living by that purpose today? See, the founders understood we as a nation would be accountable to God for what He had granted to us. They sought freedom for a purpose, and that freedom was given to us as a nation for that same purpose, to serve God, to honor Him, and to live as a people under His authority.
At the 2026 National Gathering for Prayer and Repentance in Washington, D.C., members of Congress, state leaders, evangelical leaders, and intercessors from across the nation united as one voice in prayer.
Heavenly Father, thank you so much for this gathering. We do repent, and we ask for your continued favor and blessing over our nation, even when we don't deserve it.
I thank you that because of the shed blood and the glorious righteousness of your Son, Jesus Christ, a sinner such as myself can boldly approach your throne. You said that you help the humble, and we are asking just now that you would help us, Lord.
While our God is marching on, glory, glory.
We pray that you humble us, help us to follow after you with all our hearts, so that we can see righteousness exalted in this nation, and this nation restored to you. We know that it's not by our power, it's not by our might, but it's by your Spirit.
Freedom has a name. His name is Jesus. And freedom has a purpose. It is to honor and glorify you. We pray that we would return to that purpose. Amen. Welcome back to Washington Watch. Thanks for tuning in and making us a part of your afternoon. All right, while Democrats are claiming that the president has launched a war with Iran that has no clear goal or end, the Trump administration has laid out its objectives very clearly. I mean, I don't hesitate to challenge the administration if, you know, they're going down the wrong path. I think they've been very clear on this. And they've projected a 4 to 5 week timeline, which may end up being even shorter, given the progress that has been reported.
CENTCOM, in a joint operations, is carrying out a systematic destruction of their missile belt, destruction of their launchers, and destruction of their ability to make these, as well as the destruction of their Navy. From what I've been told by the Department of War, everything is on or ahead of schedule. And proceeding on these objectives, we have every confidence in the world that these objectives will be achieved.
That, of course, was Secretary of State Marco Rubio. Well, still, despite all that, Democrats remain opposed to this war, comparing it to conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan. But is Operation Epic Fury comparable to those campaigns? Joining me now to provide a military analysis of this is retired Brigadier General John Tykert. He is a former Assistant Deputy Undersecretary of Air Force for International Affairs. He is also the book author of a recently released book, In God I Trust, Making Our National Motto My Personal Declaration. General, welcome back to Washington Watch. Thanks so much for joining us.
Tony, thanks again for having me.
All right, before we dive into Operation Epic Fury, I want to get your thoughts on that, having been in the Air Force and been very much involved in details like this. First, let's talk about your book. Give us a little bit about your book, which celebrates our nation's 250th birthday.
Tony, it does indeed, In God I Trust, Making Our National Motto My Personal Declaration. And you know, those amazing F-15Es, as an example, that are flying over Iran are incredible modern-day horses and chariots. But Psalm 20, verse 7 reminds us that some trust in chariots and some in horses, but we will remember the name of the Lord our God. And we must remember to pray for our military members in harm's way, pray for our nation, pray for our leaders, and focus on the Lord, of the source of our strength and our prosperity going forward as a nation.
Well, we certainly do need to turn to the Lord, and I think we see some evidence of that, and it's certainly the time to do it on this 250th anniversary to rediscover those biblical roots of our nation that many of our founders clearly understood, and it has been lost over the last 250 years. So appreciate that. Look forward to reading it. All right, General, I want to turn back to Operation Epic Fury. One question that has been asked is, why now? U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio has told reporters that Iran has been accumulating missiles and drones as kind of a shield to put themselves in a place where they were untouchable. Where are we at a tipping point?
Tony, that ballistic missile fleet of Iran, even apart from their nuclear program, was an existential threat to our interests in the region, certainly to Israel's survival. 3,000 ballistic missiles, as Senator Steve Daines just said, is an existential threat, and we needed to start tackling that threat immediately before it was insurmountable.
Talk a little bit about the strategy that the U.S. and Israel has deployed there in Iran against the regime.
Tony, there have been two primary target sets since the very beginning of this conflict, now almost 4 days ago. The first is command and control. And we have very systematically taken out the Iranians' ability such that now they are fighting deaf, dumb, and blind. And we're going to continue to service those targets. And then the other target set are those ways that Iran can project power. That includes drones, cruise missiles, Navy ships, and those ballistic missiles. And we are very systematically going after those launchers, those warehouses, those production facilities. And we're also starting now to shift some of our focus of targeting into internal security sites to give the Iranian people and their opposition a chance to rise up and change the regime. And we're going to continue to focus on those three major target sets going forward.
When you look at this, and the Democrats are, some of the Democrats on the left are comparing this to Iraq, Afghanistan, I'm struggling to find any type of parallel or comparison.
I agree with you that this has been the most consistent threat to the United States for the last 4.5 decades. And the president and our military leaders have made very clear that it is our number one focus to destroy their ability to project power or to do harm to our interests in the region. And then if the Iranian people are able to rise up and change the regime. But we don't have a plan for boots on the ground, though the president wisely keeps that option open, that we have a 4 to 5 week horizon. And in fact, the president has said very clearly that it's possible that the largest strikes are still to come. And there's two reasons for that. Number one, because we've destroyed their air defense capability, that essentially it's now a permissive environment. So non-stealthy aircraft like my old F-15E or the stealthy aircraft like my old F-22 are able to prosecute targets more thoroughly than they could in the first few days of the war. And then now, especially that Iran has haphazardly struck the Gulf partners, that not only are the Gulf partners defending themselves and potentially starting to be engaged in strike packages, but they are allowing our fighter aircraft to launch from their countries, which means that instead of traveling 1,000 miles to strike targets, they're only traveling a couple hundred miles. And all of that mass of our capability is now starting to truly come to bear against the Iranian regime in those target sets that I described before.
So General Tigert, with as you talked about, or we talked about earlier, that the whole regime leadership basically taken out in by the Israelis. Who's running the show?
Well, I don't know if they know who's running the show, and that's to our advantage. The first thing you typically do in warfare is, again, to disrupt the enemy so that they can't execute a strategy. And by decapitating them, not just the Ayatollah, but all of the military and political leadership, and in fact, it seems like, again, we did so today, that now they can't put up a consolidated strategy. And what we're seeing in the ballistic missile and drone attacks, especially against our Gulf neighbors, is haphazard. It's not consolidated. And that's because there is no command and control, and they don't really have a strategy that they can execute. And we're going to continue to make sure that we're keeping it that way so that they can't execute a strategy and do something that can do us harm.
General Taggart, I want to thank you for joining us. We're out of time, unfortunately, but look forward to seeing you again real soon.
You got it, Tony. Thanks for having me.
All right, folks, coming up, we're going to be joined by the governor of Oklahoma to discuss a different battle that's being waged here in the United States. It's the battle over the legalization of marijuana. That's coming up next, so don't go away.
The family is the oldest, most tested, and most reliable unit of society. It is divinely created and sustained. And yet, there are those who are always tampering with its values and structure. That's why we need organizations like the Family Research Council that can effectively defend and strengthen the family.
Family Research Council began over 40 years ago, like all great movements of God, with prayer. Today, rooted in the heart of the nation's capital, FRC continues to champion faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a biblical worldview.
FRC is one of those bright lights that helps us focus on true north. And I shudder to think, had they not been here, that it could have been worse, worse, worse.
The Family Research Council is key. It's one of a handful of groups that I think will determine whether our children live in a country that enjoyed all of the freedom and all the opportunity that we enjoyed in this great land.
It's just a wonderful parachurch organization that doesn't seek to take the place of the church, but it seeks to assist the family and the church as we try to move forward successfully, not in a defensive mode, but in an offensive mode as we seek to live our lives according to the Holy Scriptures.
FRC is not going to be whooped. we're going to fight. We're going to take a stand. And again, we don't retreat.
You will never see in front of this building here in Washington, D.C., a white flag fly. We will never step back. We will never surrender. And we will never be silent.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. Thanks so much for joining us. All right, turning to a domestic issue for a moment, it would appear that the proverbial chickens are coming home to roost when it comes to the legalization of marijuana. Now, kind of like a freight train, a push to decriminalize marijuana has been moving across the country, even federally, in the last several years. Now, several studies and even government reports show an increase in traffic accidents and fatalities, an increase in public health costs as ER visits rise, and self-harm and mental health issues, all related to the legalization and the use of marijuana. So, can this pot train be turned around? Well, joining us now for a discussion on this topic is Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt, who is urging Oklahomans to bring an end to the medical marijuana use in their state. Governor Stitt, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to see you.
Hey, good to see you, too. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Let me just first say thank you for, there's a number of issues. This is one of them, but many issues that you've just been speaking out with clarity, even though it might be counter to the political wind. So I thank you for speaking truth. We appreciate that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just bringing a little Oklahoma common sense to Washington.
Well, I understand that. I grew up in Oklahoma, so I understand about that common sense. Your recent state address, you called on citizens in Oklahoma to shut down the medical marijuana industry. What's your case for wanting to do this?
Yeah, well, first off, it passed. Oklahomans were kind of sold a bill of goods back in 2018 before I was governor because they thought they were passing medical marijuana. So they thought they were passing something that was going to help someone with chronic pain, and that was the only thing that could help them. But what actually happened is we have more dispensaries now than we have pharmacies. The industry is out of control. We grow, 32 times more marijuana than actually is consumed legally. So we know it's brought in cartel activity, Chinese influence buying land. It is not what Oklahomans thought that they were signing up for. And so I'm just asking the legislature, let's send that back to a vote of the people. We know it's harmful for young people. The stats are just very frightening. 73% of youth have increased use of marijuana now. because they think it's a medicine or it's okay or it's not as harmful. And I just think that's a bad representation of our state. So I'm asking the legislature to let Oklahomans vote on that again.
And there is also a long, long train of studies that have shown that marijuana can be, not for all, but for many, can be a gateway drug. It can lead to other drug abuse.
Well, sure. I mean, absolutely. That's pretty common sense. And I'm just, you know, frightened by the amount of kids that are doing the gummies and doing these different things and the edibles and it's just we understand how harmful it is. And when you have legalized it, then young people think that it must be okay. But there's just a lot of problems with this industry. And until it's legalized nationally, I don't think we should have a checkerboard of jurisdictions from these different states. It just creates all kinds of black market problems. And so I think it's just overall bad. It's a bad look. And again, think about that. More dispensaries, marijuana dispensaries in Oklahoma right now than we have pharmacies. And so it makes no sense. And so I'm asking Oklahomans to retake a look at that.
I was actually discussing this issue last week with the governor of my home state, now Louisiana, who you know, Jeff Landry. We were discussing this as an impediment to job creation, because many industries that you want to bring into your state, they do drug testing. They want to make sure that they've got a clean workforce that's not going to create a liability for them because they're on drugs.
Yeah, I mean, great point. We hear that all the time, whether you're a forklift driver and you've got all these, there's all kinds of banking regulations against it. It is a really a big problem when it's illegally federally, and then you have these medical marijuana exceptions. Well, anybody with a hangnail can get a medical card now. And then how is an employer supposed to deal with that? They're trying to keep their employees safe. A lot of times they're truck drivers or CDL drivers and all this versus a medicine, but we know it's inhibiting their ability to drive safely. So we had to pass a law last year to make it crystal clear that we will not allow you to smoke, be high in a car, even if it's for quote unquote medical use. So we're just giving some clarity around all those things. But yeah, from a workforce standpoint, a lot of times they have to do business in other states. So they have regulations, they have to test their employees, and we run into a lot of complications.
Just a little over a minute left, Governor. When you talked about this as an industry, and they sold the voters of Oklahoma a bill of goods, what's driving this? This is a profit-driven industry, and is it not?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in our case, it's super easy to get something on the ballot in Oklahoma, and we've tried to make that a little more challenging and a little more representative around the state. But used to, you could just stand out in front of the state fair and you could collect signatures. So we had these groups from California that would come in, would collect signatures and get enough signatures and then get it on a ballot to the people. And so, again, Oklahomans are very compassionate. Most Americans are compassionate. And when you see the 30-second commercial that says, hey, this is going to help this young person or this cancer patient, this is the only thing that helped them from a pain management standpoint, then we're going to say, okay, that's great. We want that. We assume it's going to be medicine dispensed out of pharmacies. And then all of a sudden, bam, we started getting adversely selected. We started getting Chinese influence, people buying land. We started getting more dispensaries than pharmacies. And that's the problem.
So 20 seconds, Governor, will the legislature work with you? Are the citizens going to have a chance to vote on this?
You know, I think so. We've got some great conversations with the House, the Senate. They know it's a problem. Oklahomans all over are calling our offices saying it's a problem. And so I think we'll get something back to people. And if we do, I think they'll do the right thing. And we'll either remove it completely or we'll actually regulate it properly.
All right. Thanks, Governor.
We have state leaders that want to keep the deadly drugs out of their states. Maybe if these abortion pills were coming by boat, the administration would change its tactics. It's time to respect the rights of the states, and it's time to end death by mail.
Family Research Council President Tony Perkins, alongside Senator Lindsey Graham, led a press conference on Capitol Hill, urging the Trump administration to end the Biden-era policies that have allowed dangerous abortion drugs to be shipped across state lines. They were joined by state attorneys general, pro-life advocates, and multiple Republican congressmen.
There are more abortions today in the United States than when Roe versus Wade was the law of the land. And why is that? It's because of the chemical abortion drug mifepristone. Nearly 70% of the abortions that are committed in the United States today are committed because of mifepristone.
The federal government is allowing a chemical abortion pill to be sent through the mail that wipes out every state unborn protection law in the land.
It's harder to ship alcohol in this country than it is to ship the abortion pill. And that should never be the case.
This is a drug that takes the life of every child. So there is always a death that's involved in this drug, but is also incredibly dangerous for the mom as well. We think that should require a doctor to be able to get access to this drug.
As a doctor, I think it's essential that there be human contact before the pill is prescribed.
It's not about a national abortion ban. It's about validating Dobbs and preventing other states from nullifying the legislative policy choices that have been made by our states and facilitating the illegal, unethical, and dangerous drug trafficking of abortion pills into our states without any medical oversight whatsoever.
We can simply fix this if we have the courage to do it. So what are all of us telling the administration? You've been a great pro-life president, Mr. President. It's now time to deal with this issue.
We want to protect life, and we want to give voice to the American people and their right to protect life, state by state, city by city, and yes, here in the United States Congress. That's what this fight is about.
Let your voice be heard. Text LIFE to 67742. Sign the petition. Tell the Trump administration to act.
The Stand Firm app brings trusted Family Research Council resources together in one place. Stay informed with news articles from the Washington Stand, watch interviews from Washington Watch, explore courses produced by FRC, and find many other resources to equip you to engage culture and government from a biblical perspective. Download the Stand Firm app today by texting APP to 67742 or by searching for Stand Firm in your app store.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Thanks so much for tuning in and being a part of the program. I do want to encourage you to sign the prayer petition and join us in praying for the unfolding situation in the Middle East, for Iran, for Israel, for our leaders, for our men and women in the military, and for these spiritual strongholds. So we've got some prayer points for you. We'd love for you to join this Take the Prayer Pledge. Text the word Iran, I-R-A-N, to 67742. That's 67742. Text the word Iran. All right, our word for today comes from Leviticus chapter 19. Speak to all the congregation of the children of Israel and say to them, you shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. Every one of you shall revere his mother and his father and keep my Sabbaths. I am the Lord your God. Do not turn to idols, nor make for yourselves molded gods. I am the Lord your God. You see, God called his people to be different from the rest of the world, to be holy. Lest we think of holiness as an Old Testament concept, Paul speaks of it in his letter to the Romans. Verse 1 of chapter 12, I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God and what is good and acceptable and perfect. You see, holiness is not a state of mind. It's a posture of living. To find out more about our journey through the Bible, text Bible to 67742. That's Bible to 67742. All right, as we've been discussing, we are now 4 days into the U.S. military joint operation with Israel to eliminate the threat posed by the Iranian regime. And according to U.S. Central Command, the U.S. military has so far carried out strikes against more than 1,700 targets in Iran. Israeli Defense Forces, meanwhile, said it has targeted headquarters, bases, and regional command centers of the Iranian terrorist regime's internal security bodies. Now, I should point out that these bodies were reportedly responsible for the regime's crackdown on protesters that resulted in the deaths of tens of thousands of Iranians recently. Now, while the United States is geographically far removed from the physical conflict, Israel and other Arab nations are not. Since the start of Epic Fury, Iran has, as of earlier today, fired roughly 420 missiles, 162 of those, a little over a third, at Israel. Now, Israel has also had incoming from some of Iran's proxies. And to get a sense of things on the ground in Israel and how Israelis are dealing with this latest round of attacks after months of relative peace, we're joined by Chris Mitchell, the Middle East Bureau Chief at CBN News, who comes to us from Jerusalem. Chris, thanks for joining us tonight.
Tony, great to be with you again.
And I will certainly understand if you have to run to the bomb shelter, because I understand that there have been, which is kind of unusual, but we've had missiles coming into Jerusalem. Generally speaking, in the past, Jerusalem, because of the significance of that city to both Arabs and Christians, to the Muslims, they've avoided attacking that city.
Yeah, Tony, it started actually just a few hours after Operation Epic Fury began, or as they call it over here, Operation Roaring Lion. I was on my way into the bureau after I heard about the war's beginning. I saw two interceptions just off the balcony here at the bureau. You've been here at the bureau, so you know what that's like. And even just today, we saw two or three interceptions about 1 o'clock. And it's what you have here, as we were talking, usually everybody on their phone gets a pre-alert. And then if the actually missiles are coming into the area, you get a second one, then you hear the siren out in the streets. And we saw three interceptions today. So, yeah, they have been firing at Jerusalem. And it's been certainly also in Haifa, in Tel Aviv, and throughout all of Israel. Has been getting those alerts and those hits. In fact, Tony, it hit in Tel Aviv, but Shemesh was hit as well. We had reporters down there. Tragically, 9 died there. And but certainly, we're hoping right now that the rate of missiles will start dropping as both the U.S. and Israel start targeting those ballistic missile launches.
So what's give me the sense of what the mood is there in Israel on the ground. I mean, after a protracted time of constantly being under attack, you've had a few months of relative peace. What's the sense there among the Israeli people?
I would say resolute, Tony. We were down at the Shuk, which is the open air market here in Jerusalem. People said, first of all, they're praying. Also, they're hoping that this will be freedom for the Iranian people. But the other sense, Tony, was the fact that they want to make sure they see this through to the very end. This is a possibility after decades that finally Israel can be free of its number one nemesis that is committed to its destruction. Ever since 1979. So people here in Israel want to make sure that they can finally kill the head of the snake or the head of the octopus, however you refer to Iran right now. And after 2.5 years since October 7th, it's just remarkable what change there has been since that horrific day. Now, maybe all the proxies of Iran, Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis, Iran itself may be defeated.
Let's talk about that for just a moment, because there have been some attacks coming from Lebanon, from Hezbollah. What's the status there?
Well, just a couple of days ago, I think at the urging of Iran, Hezbollah actually entered the war and they fired missiles against Haifa. They fired missiles against northern Israel. And because of that, the IDF is now actually targeting many sites in Beirut, with Hezbollah headquarters, also in southern Lebanon. In fact, the southern Lebanon is being evacuated. There's tens of thousands of Lebanese that are leaving that area because it looks like the IDF is not only going to attack from the air, but actually going to have boots on the ground there to finally eliminate the threat of Hezbollah. There was one Israeli journalist that said Hezbollah really committed assisted suicide by going ahead and entering the war, giving the IDF the reason to go and finally defeat this nemesis on its northern border.
I go back to what you said a moment ago. Since October the 7th, this is a the world has changed. Certainly the Middle East has changed. And one of my last conversations with Ron Dermer before he left the prime minister's team, as he was the prime minister of, I think, strategic affairs, or I forget what his title was. But, you know, he said that, you know, from the very start, that when Netanyahu entered into the political arena, his eye has been on Iran. He has known that they have been the existential threat, and he has not lost sight of that. You know, if they are eliminated, this threat is eliminated, what then does Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu do?
Well, I'm sure he's got a lot to do in a, if there is a post-Islamic regime world here in the Middle East. But you're right. He has been sort of like the Winston Churchill warning against Iran, just like Churchill warned against the rise of Nazi Germany. And he really has kept his eye on that. And believe it or not, it gives you some idea of how long Israel has been planning this attack. It just came out that actually the Mossad had actually infiltrated the street cameras of Tehran. And someone said they knew Tehran as good as they knew Jerusalem or the streets in your own neighborhood. So they've been planning and this attack for decades, actually. And we saw what happened with the beepers, with Hezbollah. That was a multi-year program as well. But that Israel knew that its main enemy was Iran, a nuclear-tipped Iran, ballistic missiles, all designed to eliminate the state of Israel. There was a story I heard just the other day, Tony. I think it was a Spanish prime minister went to go and visit Khomeini. And he said, what do you do every morning? What's the first thought you have every morning? And he said, eliminate Israel. So they had been preparing, spending all their treasure trying to defeat and destroy the Jewish state. And now the tables have been turned.
Let's talk about that, Chris Mitchell. Let's talk about those tables being turned, because right now in Israel is quite a significant time from a religious standpoint, as one of the major feasts is being celebrated.
That's right. It's Tony, it's the Feast of Purim. And in fact, I just saw a picture of Benjamin Netanyahu reading from the Book of Esther. And a lot of people, they go to their synagogues, they read it twice, they call it the Megillah, and they talk about what happened in that book. The only book in the Bible where the name of God is not mentioned, but they say God is throughout the whole story. Because what happened is Haman, this wicked ruler in ancient Persia, has a decree to annihilate the Jewish people. But there was a man named Mordecai who had a beautiful niece called Esther. And Esther said, for such a time as this, she was called. She went into the king and appealed to her about this decree that was going to annihilate her people. Haman's plot was exposed. Haman actually ended up on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. And so the Jewish people that I was talking to today, Tony, see a direct connection between what happened about 2,500 years ago when an ancient Persian ruler wanted to annihilate the Jewish people, and he was defeated. And here we are, 2,500 years later, a wicked, evil Iranian ruler actually has the tables turned on him. So they see a direct connection between what happened then and what is happening right now.
So, Chris, what is that doing in Israel in terms of the you know, one of the things, let me step back for a moment. One of the things that always surprised me when I first went to Israel was how secular a large portion of the nation was, that they saw themselves as Jewish in terms of their ethnic background, but not necessarily the connection to their religious heritage. Is that changing? I mean, I sense that there's a much more relationship in events that are unfolding, and they're connecting that with their spiritual heritage and what is in the Bible.
Exactly. You're right, Tony, that there is a large secular part of Israelis that may not even know their Bible. But I would say since October 7th that there has been a change, a shift in the people of Israel. Much of it has come from many of the soldiers that have fought on the ground in Gaza or in Lebanon. And they really, I would say, their Jewish roots have been revived with many of the people there with boots on the ground, as well as many of the people here in Israel. And I think there is a shift here in Israel towards the Bible, towards trying to interpret the times through the scriptures. And I think many people, especially today, are looking at what events are happening several hundred miles away from here through the book of Esther.
Well, help us, Chris, look at that from Christians here in the United States as we see this unfolding. You've been in Israel, assigned there for over two decades. You understand, you've seen the rapid development in the last few years. How should we be praying into this as believers who believe the Bible and follow the Lord Jesus Christ? And we as instructed, we pray for the peace of Jerusalem and the well-being of the Jewish people, that they would come to the fullness of their understanding of the Messiah.
Yeah, well, I would say, first of all, help try to understand the times that we're living in through the scriptures. And that would be like the sons of Issachar, who understood the times. They knew what Israel should do. One of my Jewish friends earlier today said he believes we're in this messianic era and, the prelude to the Messiah coming. We believe we are in the last days. And so I think to pray that we understand the times. Jesus said when all these things happen, look up, for your redemption draweth nigh. He said there would be wars, rumors of wars. And so I think it's a time when we have to come close to him, close to each other, help fulfill the purpose and the plan that we have for each of our lives. And as you say, pray for the peace of Jerusalem and pray that their brothers and sisters would have that revelation.
When we look, we talked about this just a moment ago, post Iranian regime, that does not mean that the Middle East is a place of peace. There are other threats that are looming there, and I believe there are others who will want to fill the void that would be left by an Iranian regime. Even though they're kind of been an outcast, they still have had an outsized influence over the Middle East, and I think there are some that would love to take on that role.
I agree, and I think many people are looking at Syria and Turkey. Turkey in particular, that has its own ambitions of expanding that neo-Ottoman empire. Recep Erdogan, the president of Turkey, has its sights set here on Jerusalem. This once was part of the Ottoman Empire. He would like to see it return to that former glory of those Ottoman Empire days. So no, it's not going to be just a whole peaceful plan. And if the regime does fall, Tony, it will be a difficult time, a difficult transition. That's why I think so many people around the world that are praying would help to pray that the transition would be smooth and easy. And just to understand as well, there's a large church within Iran, a large underground church. Many believers are brothers and sisters in Christ who have come to faith, sometimes through dreams and visions, sometimes through satellite television. But they're, I think, going to play a key role in any post-Islamic regime in Iran.
And I would imagine that this will be a great opportunity for the church to be able to minister, much like they did after the wall came down in Eastern Europe about 30 years ago. So it's huge opportunities of ministry. Chris, I want to thank you as always, staying up late and joining us. Always great to see you. We're praying for you and your family and your well-being as well. And I look forward to seeing you there in Jerusalem soon.
Sounds great, Tony. Look forward to.
All right, folks, I do want to encourage you to pray, just as Chris outlined there, and we can help you. Text the word Iran to 67742 and take the prayer pledge and pray. Join us in praying. All right, we're out of time for today, but until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council. To support our efforts to advance faith, family, and freedom, please text GIVE to 67742. That's GIVE to 67742. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information, please visit TonyPerkins.com.